ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Oh, beginning chapter 18, the prayers offered to the Lord by the residents of Jambudvip. There is a chapter summary, which I'll read first, and then we'll read the first text. In this chapter, Sukadeva Goswami describes the different varshas of Jambudvip and the incarnation of the Supreme Lord worshipped in each. The predominating ruler of Bhadrashva Varsha is Bhadrashrava. He and his many servants always worship the incarnation known as Lord Hayagriva. At the end of each kalpa, when the demon Ajnana steals the Vedic knowledge, Lord Hayagriva appears and preserves it. Then he delivers it to Lord Brahma. In the land known as Harivarsha, the exalted devotee Prahlad Maharaj worships Lord Nrisingadev. The appearance of Lord Nrisingadev is described in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, the inhabitants of Harivarsha always worship Lord Nrisingadev to receive from him the benediction of being engaged in his loving service. In the tract of land known as Ketumala Varsha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Hrishikesh, appears in the form of Cupid. Goddess of fortune and the demigods living there engage in his service day and night. Manifesting himself in 16 parts, Lord Hrishikesh is the source of all encouragement, strength, and influence. The conditioned living entity has the defect of being always fearful, but simply by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can rid himself of this defect of material life. Therefore, the Lord alone can be addressed as Master. In the tract of land known as Ramyaka Varsha, Manu and all the inhabitants worship Matsyadev to this very day. Matsyadev, whose form is pure goodness, is the ruler and maintainer of the whole universe, and as such he is the director of all the demigods headed by King Indra. In Hiranyamaya Varsha, Lord Vishnu has assumed the form of a tortoise, Kurmamurti, and is worshipped there by Aryama, along with all the other residents. Similarly, in the tract of land known as Uttarakuru Varsha, Lord Srihari has assumed the form of a boar, and in that form he accepts service from the inhabitants living there. All the information in this chapter can be fully realized by one who associates with devotees of the Lord. Therefore, in the Shastra, it is recommended that one associate with devotees. This is better than residing on the banks of the Ganges. In the hearts of pure devotees reside all good sentiments as well as the superior qualities of the demigods. In the hearts of non-devotees, however, there cannot be any good qualities. For such people are simply enchanted by the external illusory energy of the Lord. Following in the footsteps of devotees, one should know that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only worshipable deity. Everyone should accept this proposal and worship the Lord. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 15.15, Vaidaish Chasayavaya Raham Eva Veda, the purpose of studying all Vedic literature is to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. If after studying all the Vedic literature one does not awaken his dormant love for the Supreme Lord, it is to be understood that he has labored for nothing, simply wasted his time. Lacking attachment for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he remains attached to family life in this material world. Thus, the lesson of this chapter is that one should get out of family life and completely take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Text 1. It is prose, so I'll simply read the Sanskrit. Sri Shuka Uvacha Tata Cha Padrashrava Nama Dharma Sutas Tat Kula Pataya Purusha Padrashva Varshe Sakshad Bhagavato Vasudevasya Priyam Tanum Dharma Mayum Dharma Mayim Hayashish Shabhidhanam Paramena Samadhina Sanidapyedam Abhigunanta Upadhavati. Translation. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, Bhadrashava, the son of Dhammaraj, rules the tract of land known as Bhadrashavarsha. Just as Lord Shiva worships Sankarsana in Ilavartavarsha. Bhadrashava, accompanied by his intimate servants and all the residents of the land, worships the plenary expansion of Vasudeva known as Hayashirsha. Lord Hayashirsha is very dear to the devotees, and he is the director of all religious principles. Fixed in the topmost trance, Bhadrashava and his associates offer their respectful obeisances to the Lord and chant the following prayers with careful pronunciation. No purport, next verse. Bhadrashravasa uchu om namo bhagavate dharmayatma vishodhanaya nama iti. Translation. The ruler Bhadrashava and his intimate associates utter the following prayer. We offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all religious principles, who cleanses the heart of the conditioned soul in this material world. Again and again we offer our respectful obeisances unto him. Purport. Foolish materialistic persons do not know how they are being controlled and punished at every step by the laws of nature. They think they are very happy in the conditioned state of material life, not knowing the purpose of repeated birth, death, old age, and disease. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita 7:15, Lord Krishna describes such materialistic persons as mudhas, rascals. Namam duskritino mudha prapajante naradama. These mudhas do not know that if they want to purify themselves, they must worship Lord Vasudev, Krishna, by performing penances and austerities. This purification is the aim of human life. This life is not meant for blind indulgence and sense gratification. In the human form, the living being must engage himself in Krishna consciousness to purify his existence. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam sudyat. This is the instruction of King Rishabhdev to his sons. In the human form of life, one must undergo all kinds of austerities to purify his existence. Yasmad brahma saukyam tvanantam. We are all seeking happiness, but because of our ignorance and foolishness, we cannot know what unobstructed happiness really is. Unobstructed happiness is called Brahma Saukhya, spiritual happiness. Although we may get some so-called happiness in this material world, that happiness is temporary. The foolish materialists cannot understand this. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj points out, Maya Sukaya Bharam Udvahato Vimudhan. Merely for temporary materialistic happiness, these rascals are making huge arrangements, and thus they are baffled life after life. So, before I begin, Damodulal asked me, I guess it's connected to some previous talks, to speak about Moscow, is that true? Was it connected to some previous talks you said some devotees spoke? Shyamasundar. I'll speak about it, but I thought I could tie it into the context of this verse. Because there are many important points highlighted by Srila Prabhupada in his commentary to this verse, which all center around the principle of this prayer, which the devotees and of Bhadrashrava are offering. The principle is that they're asking the Lord to cleanse the heart, their hearts, in this material world. We offer respectful obeisances to the Supreme Lord, the reservoir of all religious principles, who cleanses the heart of the conditioned soul in this material world. So, they're praying to that Lord who is the personality who cleans the heart. And Srila Prabhupada explains in his commentary that cleansing the heart means giving up the idea for sense enjoyment. This is how he explains the meaning of cleansing the heart. He describes the mentality of the foolish materialists who pursue sense gratification, quoting the verse, Namam Duskritina Mudha Prapajantena Naradama. The Mudhas are foolish persons. They're like the asses who work very hard in order to obtain some fruit. And the example is always given, the ass is blinded by the washerman so that he can carry a very heavy load, because he thinks at the end of his long journey there is some green grass. So he is blinded so that he will not see that all around him is green grass. And then he'll work very hard carrying that heavy load for the long journey in order to obtain that green grass. That is the basic mentality of Mudha, the ass-like person, who willingly accepts austerities, but for what purpose? For sense enjoyment. So Srila Prabhupada therefore explains that austerities are required, but real austerities are those austerities which are aimed for the satisfaction of the Lord. Just as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you perform, you should do it unto me. Many examples given in the Shastra about the purpose of austerities. And Prabhupada quotes the verse by Lord Rishabde, Tapo Divyam Putra Kayena Sadvam Sudya Jasmad Bhama Sakyam Tanantam. Nayam Deho Deham Bajam Niloke Kashtankaman Ahate Vidbujam Ye. And he quotes this verse. And of all living entities who have accepted material bodies, one who is awarded the human form of life should not labor very hard for sense and gratification, which is available for hogs and dogs that eat stool. That one should accept divine austerities, the po divyam putraka yena sattvam. One should voluntarily accept divine austerities, by which what happens is his heart becomes purified, and by which he can achieve transcendental happiness, which is spiritual happiness, which is transcendental material happiness, and which continues forever. One should accept divine austerities and penances. Here again we see this austerity. Austerities aimed for the satisfaction of the Lord purifies the conditioned soul from the desire for sense enjoyment. Whereas austerities, one person that may perform any severe austerities, as we described the ass, he accepts a very difficult labor. But his motivation is the green grass. The fruitive worker, his motivation is to accept austerities voluntarily, but in order to get some material gain, some fruit. But a devotee accepts austerities in order to get the satisfaction of the Lord. That is his fruit. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in Sri Bhakti Loka, when he describes the characteristic of the karmis, the jnanis, and yogis, they all want some result. Even karmis, jnanis, and the devotees, even the devotees want some result. How is it possible? Devotees want result. But the karmis, they want some fruitive gain. The jnanis, they want liberation. The devotees, what is the result? They want Krishna's pleasure. They want Krishna to be pleased by their activities. So still, devotees want some result too, but it's not for them. It's for Krishna. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, sometimes we see that a devotee, he may engage in prolonged sadhana, and he may become discouraged having failed to achieve his desired fruit, his desired result. And therefore, after some time, he may give up his sadhana. And Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that patience is required. And patience means that the devotee is convinced that either now, a year from now, 10 years from now, 100 years from now, or some other future birth, I will get Krishna's mercy and I will go on serving Krishna. That patience is required in the execution of devotional service. So still, the devotee wants some fruit. He wants to obtain Krishna's pleasure. If Krishna is pleased, then that is a source of happiness for the devotee. And the devotee is willing to undergo any kind of personal inconvenience in order to obtain this fruit. Krishna bhakta nishkama atayeva shanta bhukti mukti sirikami sakal yashanta. A devotee of Krishna, he is nishkama. He has no desire that he wants to achieve for himself. And therefore, he is peaceful. Whereas those who want mukti, sense enjoyment, those who want liberation, those who want mystic yoga perfections, they are kami. They still have some lusty desires and sakali ashanta. Therefore, they can never be peaceful. Karmis, jnanis, and siddhis, they can never have peace in mind because they always, they are never satisfied, even with the result they get by their sacrifices performed. They cannot be fully satisfied. Whereas a devotee, what does he depend on for his satisfaction? This is where his faith, of course, is very much involved. A devotee depends upon his satisfaction. He depends on Krishna. He understands that Krishna, he'll satisfy me. He'll give me all the satisfaction I need so that I can serve him. Even if the Lord puts me in difficulty, this satisfies me. Someone may ask, how is that possible? How is difficulty a source of satisfaction? It satisfies me because I have faith that the Lord has put me in difficulty to bring me closer to him. Therefore, I'm satisfied. I'm satisfied because Krishna did it. That is a devotee's mentality. If Krishna does it, whatever he does, I'm satisfied. Because I know it's for my good. That's all I pray. Whatever you do, Krishna, put me in difficulty, give me opulence, whatever condition of life you put me in, you do it, and then I'll be satisfied. Don't let anyone else do it. Please, take charge. You do it. When he chants Hare Krishna, he's praying, Krishna, please, put me under your protection. Give me the protection of your internal potency. No. If I come under the protection of your internal potency, then I know that whatever condition of life I may find myself in is still under your protection. Therefore, a devotee is satisfied. Narayana paraksave na kutaschanya bibhati svarga pavarga narakishva pituliyata darshana. A devotee is satisfied in any condition of life, whether he's in hell, whether he's liberated, whether he's in heaven, for him it is all the same. Because a devotee is only interested in one thing. How to serve Krishna. That is his exclusive concern. I want to serve Krishna. Therefore, for a devotee, he is shanta. He's peaceful. He's satisfied. Krishna bhakta nishkama. Because he has no desire for himself. His desire is only to please Krishna. So Prabhupada explains here, this is our austerity. We have to accept austerities. I was once in a lecture in Mayapur, 1976. Srila Prabhupada was speaking about austerities. And he said this point, which made an impression upon me. Obviously, I was sitting in class at this particular time. And it was very austere in Mayapur at that time, in 1976. If I tell you the conditions that we were living in, Anyways, for a Westerner, it was very austere. Everyone, 90% of the devotees had dysentery. And there were no living facilities in Mayapur at that time. I was sleeping on a concrete slab. That was it. I didn't even have a mosquito net. I had a sheet on a concrete slab. And there were no showers. There was a few pumps. And it was, the Lotus building was there, but there were a lot of devotees from Radha Damodar there that year. And there was well over 1,000 devotees, and only maybe a handful could be accommodated in the Lotus building. And nothing, and there was the wall, the rooms in the wall, which were filled with maybe about 20 people in each room. And the rest got the concrete slab, which was the foundation for the long building. So austerities were there. And I was also very, very sick, sleeping right next to the pump for reasons which were obvious. And Prabhupada was giving lecture. And he said, for a devotee, what is a devotee's austerity? He said, a devotee does not, he said, sometimes people, they will, in order to perform austerities, he said, they will sit in a circle of fire in the middle of the summer. He said, other types of austerities is that they will sit deeply submerged in cold water in the middle of the winter. He said, but devotee does not have to perform these types of austerities. He says, what is our austerity? Our austerity is simply to strictly follow instruction of spiritual master. That is our austerity. He says, a devotee does not have to look for any other austerities. They're all there in this one. Simply follow instructions of spiritual master. So, naturally, these words were a little bit of a solace for my heart at that particular austere time in my life. Somehow or other, to simply strictly follow the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, I could understand that if we accept that, then all other austerities are automatically there, and I could understand that's why I come here to Mayapur to hear from his lotus lips. All these other austerities are just simply part and parcel of getting the opportunity to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from his lotus mouth. And it was difficult to tolerate, but Prabhupada gave us this solace that if we simply strictly follow, that is all that is necessary. And the result of austerities, as Prabhupada is explaining in this verse, is if one accepts austerities, tapo divyam futuraka yena sattvam, human life is meant for austerities, but one's heart becomes purified. Tapo divyam futuraka yena sattvam, sudyadyasmat bhambas sokyam tvanantam. As one performs these austerities, gradually his heart becomes purified, and one achieves happiness, real happiness, which is transcendental to material happiness, and which continues forever. So, this is the relevant word that Srila Prabhupada has expanded upon in his commentary in respect to cleansing the heart, purifying the heart, which the residents of Bhadrashrava are praying for. Please purify our hearts. The result of such purification is that the desire for sense gratification becomes uprooted from within the core of the heart. Because Krishna replaces that desire for sense enjoyment with a superior desire, which is to satisfy Him, which satisfies the heart. And when the heart is satisfied, when the Lord is satisfied, then sense gratification becomes very insignificant. Prabhupada would many times quote that verse in Bhagavad Gita, Param Drishtva Nivartante, Vishaya Vinivartante, Nirahara Siddhi, Rasavajam Rasopasaparam Jastra Nivartate. The embodied soul may restrict himself from sense enjoyment, even though the taste for sense objects still remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he becomes fixed in his consciousness. Higher taste comes when the Lord is pleased. The devotee feels satisfaction within the heart. It's a satisfaction which is incomparable, which cannot be compared to any pleasure of this material world. It is satisfaction that which is so satisfying, the devotee is willing to undergo any type of austerity or inconvenience in order to experience it. That is how a devotee is willing to accept austerities, to tolerate. He doesn't tolerate for the sake of the austerities themselves. He tolerates for the sake of getting the fruit, which is to please the Lord. If he has this fixed in his mind, a devotee can undergo any kind of inconvenience. And devotees experience that. In the early days, so many devotees will tell the stories. I'm sure Shyama Sundar spent so much time telling stories relating at the kind of austerities that the devotees had to undergo. They tolerated. Because what was their only ambition? Prabhupada's smile. That was the only thing. Somehow or other to come back and to see Srila Prabhupada smile. They knew if Prabhupada smiled, Krishna was pleased. Therefore, austere conditions could be overcome easily because there was an impetus. There was strength. There was a desire, to please Prabhupada. And inconveniences will come. Matra spashasti kantiya sitoshna sukha dukha da agama payano nityastangsa tikshasa bharata. The non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of the winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. Devotee tolerates inconveniences because he has something, he has hope. It's something that gives him hope that he'll be able to achieve in the future. I have hope that if I tolerate these inconveniences now, I have hope that Krishna will be pleased. The devotee has to feel that hope. It's called ashabhanda. Right? Hope against hope. That somehow or other, although I have no qualification myself to achieve the highest transcendental position, still, because Krishna is so merciful, so kind, by His strength, by His power, I will be able to achieve the highest position. How to get that hope? We get that hope, as Prabhupada has explained in his commentary, by association with Vaishnavas. We get that hope. Such is the value of association with Vaishnavas. We get hope by serving them, by pleasing them. We'll actually be able to achieve the desired goal. So this is the foundation. This is the foundation of purification. If we have any hope for purifying our hearts, and we see that wherever devotees had to undergo great difficulties, great struggles, they did it, they tolerated it, they accepted it willingly, even with happiness, with joy, they accepted it. Because they had hope that by doing this, I can please Guru and Krishna. So as we said, we wanted to tie in this theme. Because this is the theme of which, at least for some, for many devotees, who had to undergo great austerities, difficulties, tolerate so much, but they did it because they have hope that by doing so, Prabhupada would be pleased. So, that is the actual foundation of the situation as it stands right now in Moscow. That the devotees who are struggling, they're struggling with a purpose. And the type of struggles which they are experiencing, they are difficult. They're definitely austere. In fact, January 7th was given as the date that all the devotees have to be off the land completely, which was given to them by the Moscow government. And if anybody knows what January 7th is Moscow in Moscow is like, you probably don't know. You probably don't know what January 7th in Moscow is like, but I can tell you what January 7th in Moscow is like from first-hand experience. It's cold. It is very cold. It is so cold that you cry and your eyes freeze. Shut. Because it is so cold. It is austere, certainly. And devotees in Moscow, even last year, they had to take, there was no water. They were living in a temporary temple. They had no water coming into the building. They had no sewer going out. Everything was done outside. Devotees would take their bath outside in January, February, and with hot water. They heated it. But that was the kind of austere conditions they were living in. And they couldn't do anything because the government had issued a paper, a document, saying that the land was given to us, but the document was incomplete. And they said, don't worry about it. At later time, we'll fix the document. We'll take back this old document and give you a new document. But the devotees could not go any farther. But how could they invest, you know, such a large amount of money on a word of a person who was going to leave office? So therefore, they've been struggling for so long to get another document that would ensure that they could continue the worship of Shishi Doyle Nitai Sachi Sutta, and in the future to initiate the worship of Shishi Radha Madhava, which were the deities of Radha and Krishna, which the devotees aspired to install in the new temple. They needed something secure for their worship. So, yet what happened is that there was a reversal. Although this land and struggle, which the devotees have known for many years in Russia, it has been a very difficult time. I could talk about struggles, I could go all the way back to the early days, but I think the devotees are aware of these struggles in the history of the former Soviet Union, of the kind of austerities they had to undergo, and the risks they had to undergo to establish Krishna consciousness in this place, this forsaken land. As everyone knows, or should know, that even back in the late 1980s, they inhabited an abandoned building because the government would not give them anything to engage in worship. So they found this building, which was abandoned, and it was ready to be demolished. I think it was actually on the list of one of the buildings to be destroyed. And the devotees decided that they would go there and live in it because they had no other place to go. And they gradually began to fix it up, and because they fixed it up, then the government recognized, this building has some value to it, so now we'll charge you to live there. So they began paying some rent to live in this building that was gradually fixed up over many, many years. And that was their place of worship. But as you also know, then gradually what happened was that the government decided they wanted to use that land for other purposes. And they said, you must leave. We want to sell it to another company who wants to build on this land, build a very big temple. And the devotees had no place to go. And for many years, the local government kept on promising, we will give you some land, we will give you some land. And every time we tried to negotiate, they would never come through and give any land. So finally they gave this land, which is prime location, on this condition, as we explained right now, is the condition was it was a document that was given that was incomplete, but later it would become complete. And then what happened is what the devotees were forced to leave our old temple, which the devotees had lived in for approximately 15 years and developed and was used as a place of worship for thousands of devotees in Moscow. And on Janmashtami this year, they had, 7,000 people, I think they said, on Janmashtami in Moscow. Radhanath Maharaj was there, I was there. It was fantastic celebration on the parking lot. You know, we just put a big pandal up and we had celebration all day. And this is a lot of people that come for worship. And we have simply one little metal building which can fit approximately maybe maximum 100 people, with a ceiling in the temple that you can't even put your hands up because the ceiling is too low. If you dance with your hands up, you can't dance. Otherwise you'll break your wrists. That's the situation the devotees have been living in the last year, because they can't do anything else waiting for this piece of paper. And then on October 7th of this year, the mayor said, yes, the document was not good. We retract it, but we're not going to give you another one. Instead, you should get off the land. And that was the result of a lot of pressure from the Russian Orthodox Church, who has been protesting against our presence on this land right from the very beginning, since it was donated to us. There's been a very big protest. And on the streets, they've been protesting. And many places, in fact, even we had a festival in South Russia just a couple of months ago, and on the first day of our festival, the Russian Orthodox Church came and staged a protest on the place where we were conducting our festival, where there were 3,000 devotees, and they started making such statements like, these people worship Krishna, who is a demon, and they were quoting verses from Bhagavad Gita in the complete misinterpretation. And the head priest was there, and he said, he made statements that these people have cut off the head of a Russian Orthodox priest in Siberia, and don't think that they will not do the same thing to you. Making such inflammatory statements like this, and thinking that they were going to arouse the people to, you know, revolt against us. These are the types of things that they have done, and they continue to do. And even in the most recent event, is that one Russian Orthodox priest has written a letter to Mayor Lushkov, and in his letter, he's actually denounced Krishna blatantly, saying so many things about Krishna which we cannot even repeat here. And wrote a letter in protest, why are you giving a place of worship for people who worship this kind of so-called God, and made so many disparaging statements directly about Krishna. And now this letter is being circulated and it is inflamed. Many Hindus in England and in India, and I don't know where this is going to lead. I cannot say. But at least at this particular point, although the mayor has told the devotees to get off the land, the devotees are not going to leave on January 7th. And instead they have begun a court case against the local government, and they've solicited help internationally from many Indians abroad. And as Bhaktivedanta Maharaj expressed personally to me in a phone conversation about 4 days ago, he said, the battle of Kurukshetra is about to begin. And the armies are standing on both sides. And on January 7th, which is the date which has been given by the mayor to be off that land, he didn't give any ultimatum, but we can expect that on January 7th, it's quite likely that they may try to force the devotees off the land. So that is just a little bit about the struggles the devotees are undergoing in Moscow. But as I explained, that we would present this in the light of this verse, that the devotees who are there who are undergoing the austerities, they've understood that there is a higher purpose in the austerities that they are undergoing, and that is Srila Prabhupada's pleasure. And they're ready to undergo personal inconvenience and austerities to awaken his pleasure. And whatever result he wishes to give them, whatever result the Lord wishes to provide them, that is their choice. But they are prepared to accept the inconveniences as which they have accepted now, with even no place to live. Many of the devotees have scattered and lived in various other places. No one can live in the temple. Hardly maybe 8-10 devotees are living there because it's such small, austere facilities to live in. So this is where everything stands right now in Moscow. And we ask the devotees to pray for the Lord to, if he so desires, a nice place of worship in Moscow, then we should pray to the Lord that if you so desire, please help these devotees in their fight against oppression, and help them to establish a very wonderful and beautiful temple for your glorification. So, I think that is all I wish to speak. There is a lot more I could speak about, but I have to prepare to go. I have a flight this morning, so I'll end here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.